This is Vatican Radio. I'm Tracy McClure. The U.S. State Department's Special Representative for Religion and Global Affairs says religious literacy is at the heart of fully educated citizenship, and that interfaith interaction in the classroom and on the soccer field can build healthy pluralist societies. Sean Casey spoke to me on a visit to Rome this week. Thank you very much for being with us here on Vatican Radio.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
First of all, interfaith dialogue, and particularly dialogue with Islam, really took on a new urgency after the September 11th attacks back in 2001. Here we are, 2016. How far have we come, and have we come far enough?
I think the short answer is we've come a very long way. And to the second question, we still have a very long way to go. I think the good news is in the United States, the Muslim community has grown. Some estimates are that between 3 and 5 million Muslims now living in the United States. And at the grassroots level, the number of non-Muslim Americans who now know Muslims as friends and neighbors has grown quite significantly. So there's been what I simply call grassroots conversation at the neighborhood level. I think at the national level, there are now ongoing discussions in a very robust, complex way between Christian leaders, Jewish leaders, and Muslim leaders. I think when you open the aperture a little wider, there's an amazing array of dialogues going on across the faiths, across the world. And it's so complex, it's not easy to sort of stereotype what's going on. But I do think, to give you a concrete example, recently a group of 120 Muslim scholars met in Marrakesh and issued what they called the Marrakesh Declaration. And there were some non-Muslims in attendance there as observers. But that's worth taking time to Google and to see this the really robust statement that has come out, I think, forged in some interreligious dialogue. I think the second thing I would say, the Holy Father himself back in January of 2014, in his first address to the diplomatic corps here in the Vatican, stressed in a way perhaps in a way none of his predecessors had about there was a deep need for dialogue between the Christian world and the Muslim world. And I think you're seeing now the Pope himself beginning to engage in some very fruitful and interesting dialogues across the Muslim world. So we're in a much better place than we were in 2001. But given the fact that there are 1.6 billion Muslims around the world and approximately 2.2 billion Christians, there's a long way to go.
If you were to compare the U.S. And its interfaith relations, its relations especially with the Muslim community there, and you look at the U.K., France, perhaps, where there have been, it seems, more serious issues of integration of the Muslim communities, where would you rate the United States in comparison with some European countries?
Well, I'm a little hesitant to compare states, but I will say, based on what I know in the United States, for example, my daughter just graduated from college, and I think back to her public school career in Fairfax County, Virginia, just on the outskirts of Washington, D.C. She had Muslim teachers. She had Muslim classmates. She had Muslim neighbors. When we moved to Washington in 2000, that really wasn't the case in the public schools in Fairfax County. So in a 10 to 15 year period, there's really been an expansion of just at the level of lived religion, a lot more conversation, as I say, at the school lunch table and on the soccer field. I think that's happening all across America today. It's not just a phenomenon of the two coasts, but there's a rich pluralism religiously that is now growing across the country. And that's where I think the great hope is, at least as I see it, that the PTA, a city council, local athletic community association level, there's a lived pluralism that simply has not been present until recent days in the United States. I don't think.
What do you attribute that to? Why is it working?
Well, I think I want to say it's the nature of American civil society, which is far from perfect. You know, we certainly have our prejudices, we have our intolerances, where the American society is not perfect. But our vision of democracy, I think, welcomes, at least in theory, diverse groups of people to whatever tables there might be in public life. And I think the American Muslims are very diverse in terms of their countries of origin. Many of them now are the fourth, fifth generation Americans. They are participating in democracy. There's not a sense of, oh, we're going to bar you at the door because you're a member of this faith group or another faith group. Now, when you think about France and you think about the UK, I really don't have the expertise to compare why integration perhaps has gone at a different pace or in a different direction. But I can speak pretty confidently of the American experience that I've seen, and particularly my own children have lived. I think, again, despite our imperfections, American democracy is open. And we've seen this narrative in the past. I'm Irish-American. I read stories about what it was like to live in Boston and to be Irish Catholic, for instance, in the 19th century and early 20th century. And it was hard. Now you go to Boston, and the feeling is the Irish Americans own the place, right? So I think we can point in our history in the not-too-distant past where various ethnicities, various religions have come to America in waves, and it's been a bumpy road, but it's been a road of progress for them. So in many ways, this is just the latest iteration, I would argue, of how America has lived through a new wave of pluralism. And so we've got some memory, I think, to draw upon.
And education here. You mentioned your daughter going to school and having teachers who are Muslim. We heard from Popes John Paul II, from Benedict the 16th, and of course also Pope Francis. They've all upheld the need for education, for peace, and respecting the other. There are many places today where kids are taught, you know, the other is something dirty, something to stay away from, something to disdain. How do we get beyond that?
So one of the great things that is going on among religion scholars and I think in a lot of universities is this notion of religious literacy. When I was a child in the American South, religious literacy, maybe you knew the difference between Methodists and Baptists, right? The diversity wasn't huge. It was within the Christian tradition. But now, understanding the other all the world's major religions and even some of the smaller religions are internally complex. They're internally plural. So simply because you meet one Catholic or you meet one Sunni Muslim does not mean you understand the full complexity of those communities. So it takes work. It is something that can be taught and learned about what are the basics of each faith, where do they overlap, where are they different. And I think there's now more intentionality in a lot of public education systems that to be a fully educated citizen means you need to have at least a basic understanding of the world's religions that you might interact with, or your family might interact with. I think that's a great movement. I think it's a global movement. But it's hard. It's difficult. You have to have people come together to write those textbooks because there's no one faith that has the expertise or the right to describe all the others for any particular public school. So this is one movement, I think, where religion scholars are very conscious of their public duty in helping schools develop curricula that represent this kind of basic literacy that would make one a well-educated citizen in a diverse, pluralistic democracy.
From what I understand, the Marrakesh Declaration builds on the historical Islamic sources, such as the Charter of Medina, which is a very ancient document, mm-hmm. a medieval mm-hmm. document, I believe. Some commentators have called the declaration a waste of time if governments aren't prepared to implement wide-ranging constitutional changes, including those that make Islam the religion of the state. Do predominantly Muslim countries need to re-examine the question of citizenship today?
I think at the center of the declaration is a call for sort of a wider conception of citizenship in the Muslim world. I would say, first of all, that's a very good thing that 120 Muslim leaders from across the planet came together and came to that theological and political consensus. It's not my office's business. It's not the United States government's business to argue theology with anybody, good theology, bad theology. We have no competency theologically to make those kinds of judgments. I will say I think the Marrakesh Declaration is a very good thing for exactly the reasons you cited. It wasn't because a group of outside non-Muslims coerced a group of scholars to come to that conclusion. This has been a part of a process that this group of leaders has been in for some time, And the declaration represents sort of the, I wouldn't say end point, but in many ways a beginning point now for a public conversation in the Muslim world. And I think that's got to be a very good thing. Now, simply because you have a group of prominent leaders calling for something doesn't mean that in the next 24 hours that's suddenly going to spontaneously appear around the world. But it is a good trend. It is one that we see is a good thing because this certainly is an issue where the Muslim world needs to do more work. And I think, frankly, the fact that scholars of this kind of diversity and prominence came together, and I'd say maybe they're midway in their process. They're now trying to promote this at the grassroots level. And that's really where, that's what bears watching, I think, is to the extent to which there can be an intra-Muslim conversation on this nexus of issues. And if they can heed the advice to have a conversation around this notion of citizenship, I think one can only be hopeful that that process will continue. So we see it as a very salutary moment, and we're quite intrigued to see how that's going to, how that dialogue is going to continue.
Sean Casey is the U.S. State Department's Special Representative for Religion and Global Affairs.